This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, September 1st, 2010.
I call the meeting to order. I realize that is unprecedented, but let's get going, because we have quite a lot that we'd like to get through today. And so I think the first thing to do is just to go around the room. Everybody has their, or almost everybody has tags. And so let's just see who's who. Ed, you want to start?
I'm Edward Strong. I'm a graduate student in genetics and development, and I'm the vice chair.
I'm Will Kandel. I'm a sophomore at ILR School, and I'm a UA representative.
I'm Jared Bellman, also in ILR School. I was elected along with William in the spring. I'm a senior, and I'll be student chair this year.
I'm Mike Walsh. I'm a PhD candidate in the Department of Biological and Environmental Engineering, and I'm a representative of the graduate and professional student body.
I'm Evan Cortez, a PhD student in music. I'm one of the GPSA humanities representatives, so I'm the voting member of that body.
Leon Lawrence, I'm an employee of the university.
Jim Laird, representing the employee assembly, one of four.
I am seen as the director of the office of assembly. Support.
Jim Byer, also a employee representative.
Amy
O'Donnell
from the Office of
Assembly. And I'm Charlie Walker from Neurobiology and Behavior, the faculty representative. Why don't we just, would you mind just saying who our visitors are?
Yeah, sure. My name is Ramsey. I'm an ILR student, also a sophomore.
Excellent.
I'm Melissa Lukasiewicz. I'm a freshman in ILR school as well.
I'm Oscar Gray. I'm a freshman in ILR as well.
Thanks a lot.
Welcome to Cornell.
I'm John, and I'm a student
at Cornell. Excellent. Okay, we seem to have a high representation of ILR people in Cornell.
Who knows why?
Maybe we're union.
Gosh. Well, the next exciting adventure is the call for late additions to the agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda at this time? Hearing none, that's good. Now to a highly controversial item, approval of the minutes from the May 5th meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
I have one thing in that email that I sent out. Did anybody read the email that I sent?
Yes, but I don't remember it.
It said something like, Ari, it says, the minutes said that Ari said, much has not changed in the last 20 years. I thought that probably saying much has changed in the last 20 years.
Only both of those things have changed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure what the context was.
I believe that only in the context of the UA charter and
the charter hasn't changed in 20 years.
No,
that's not significant.
But maybe that's what it meant. That I sort of, maybe I just read it.
We accept your clarification.
Thank you.
Motion to pass the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Discussion, I'm sorry. No discussion. All in favor? Wonderful. They're passed and approved. Now, we come to an item which I don't understand. Ed, what is the report on the caucus?
Just an idea of what each caucus is, as if anything would happen during the summertime, and if there's any priority items that you know of that have already arisen for the school year from some of your constituencies. So I guess I'll start with graduate students. I'm not aware of much that happened during the summertime. I wasn't able to make it to the last GPSA meeting. I don't know if Evan or Mike, if anything came up that I know it's a charter review year for the GPSA, so that'll be a...
That's all I can say.
They get to go through that pain along with us.
That's one of the sort of issues in charter review is to try and work out. We have this sort of bifurcated structure whereby we have voting representatives and non-voting representatives. I think that's going to be something that is discussed a lot, because we have perpetually these non-voting seats not filled. There's something like 30% occupied. So we're going to look at that.
Yeah. Good. Yes.
In terms of the undergraduates, I kept my caucus updated on the charter review stuff. Ed essentially gave me a crash course on the UA. The phone call is very nice to him. And we have a few things in the works that we've been talking about, but I think I'll wait until Andrew comes to start bringing those things up.
Great. Anybody else?
The employee assembly met at noon today. They had no specific charters for me or for us at the meeting. They did pass a resolution supporting the temporary barriers until more permanent ones can be replaced, and they're going to be forwarding that on for so the executive committee actually will get the listserv notification with the formal resolution shortly. They, like we're kind of struggling with and actively hopefully going to resolve very soon, they want to be a more active voice for the Cornell staff. There is some concern about commitment of some of the departments for employee members to go to be a part of the employee assembly, time, you know, expense, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking into that, so they've not asked that anything be brought forward yet, but it was a point of kind of unexpected discussion today. And they're looking to expand the size of the EA and increase visibility to become a more effective representative unit. They're kind of struggling a bit on how they might do that. But I think they're going to spend some energy trying to figure that out.
Good. It sounds rather familiar.
Yes. I think they will definitely be interested in our work.
Anything else around the table?
From faculty?
Nothing that I know of, so I have no real contact with the faculty, and Bill Fry isn't here, so... And my guess is the faculty is so busy getting organized for fall semester they haven't thought. All right. We now come to convening committees and appointing UA committee liaisons. And
So we have a number of UA committees, which hopefully maybe Ari can pull up in a second. Just basically, we need to get these up and running as soon as possible, and people start to think about which committees they would like to be liaisons to. So our standard practice right now in the charter is X number of committees. UA members are non-voting members of these committees and act as liaisons to convene the committee, set up the times that they meet, and get them up and running, and then report back to the UA with any statuses. So if you can, we very much hope that everybody's willing to volunteer. So some of them are Transportation Advisory Committee, Family Services Committee, Child Care Subcommittee.
Oh, hey, look at that.
There we go.
You can check the destroy. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Ari?
Oh, one more UA.
I think that takes care of a lot of our work this year.
I didn't realize it was so simple.
So looking at this list, I don't expect that we can get liaisons to everything right now because most people are trying to figure out their schedules. But if there's anything that jumps out at you that you very much would like to serve on, either speak up now or let the executive committee know after the meeting.
I just wanted to ask there, and then I'm less familiar with the old charter. There's no IT thing up there. The IT is a new committee, and it's a
proposal for possible new committee. Yeah,
okay.
Which we'll get to in just a minute. Yeah, these are our current
committees. Sure.
And just a point I want to make about this list as opposed to the other one I was going to show. This one excludes committees that have been dormant for many years that are proposed for removal because there doesn't seem to be much point in staffing them at this time.
So we've leaned forward in the removals, but not in the new.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, if you want the headway to get the CURW committee going, hey, man, it's all you. But, yeah, we're going to talk about how to put the new ones, how to go forward with those in a couple of minutes.
Have we spoken to CURW at all?
I think, 2 years ago we did, but not of recent history we haven't. So, if you'd like to spearhead that.
I'll give them a call.
2 years ago, sorry.
Yeah.
Back about 2 years ago, or so, I can't remember exactly when, but we reached out to them and they were kind of surprised and
maybe a little bit annoyed that they were still listed as a committee because they had felt they'd been removed 4 years ago. 5 years ago, sorry.
I would be open to participating. I'd like to know some sort of, in terms of the timing, like when they're meeting. I don't know if it like conflicts with something else.
Yeah, so the UA rep is the convener. So in theory, you get to largely decide that. Of course, you don't have to work with them. Some of them, like TAC, has a traditional meeting time that it's always met at. I'm sure some of the other ones have kind of done the same thing. So I can kind of let you know. Maybe that would be the best. I'll try and find out what they normally meet at, and I'll send out an email to let people know. Okay.
They generally meet monthly?
Generally, we try and get them to meet monthly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What is like the UA liaison like do in terms of like facilitating these meetings? Like,
I think it varies. So as a TAC liaison for the past 2 years, my job was very little actually. They had a person that took notes. There was a chair of the committee. Last year there was a request to look into some nighttime parking permit requirements. Brought that to the committee, had transportation services investigated. The committee then talked about it, and this was basically a relay of information to and from each.
It's really communication, I think, and one of the arguments that we're going to talk about a little while for the charter is to have it be a UA member who's actually chair of the committee, so that it's clear that there's that kind of liaison.
Okay.
So I think the way to leave this, you will distribute if you can discover it, kind of meeting time.
As much meeting time as I don't think I'll be able to find all of it, but as much meeting time as I can, I'll distribute. And then please do consider volunteering for liaison if it's one committee that's relevant to yourself or your constituents.
And can I ask a seemingly stupid question, but like University Assembly, Employee Assembly Delegation. There are four of us here from the Employee Assembly, so.
So, this seems like the easiest way to pull committees that were staffable, but it lists both committees that need people to be staffed to, which is that requestable part, and the ones that say no are just, there wasn't an easy way to separate them in this listing.
So
the Employee Assembly Delegation is not a committee that needs to be staffed. It's
all right.
A grouping within the database.
It is. All right.
Are we staffing them now, or?
If you want to be liaison to it. Okay. Do you want sustainability?
Sure.
I was going to say, as I recall, at the end of last year.
Yeah. In my big area.
Yeah.
And I'll do transportation again unless somebody else really is itching for that one.
Even what? So.
I was going to say transportation. You're the expert.
Dave,
No.
Okay.
if we end up creating the charter and everything, there's an IT committee. I think Sam provisionally interested in that.
All right. But
we'll have to see if that happens.
Yeah. We'll have an ad hoc committee potentially on it. So.
What's student delegation?
Probably the same question, Jim.
Yeah.
I think it's just RU that in order to set up the database, you put these delegations on there as well, but they're not our committees.
Yeah, some of them are just groupings of people that we want to put on an email list together for some reason.
Is the university sustainability, is that in fact the last one, or is that just the bottom of the screen? Is that the last one?
It looks like the last one to me.
Is that the last one? Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. There is, of course, the option for new committee.
Yeah.
And I don't recognize anything missing from that list that we normally have up and running. So yeah.
Getting the oldest nervous, leaving some of these hanging for another month. There's family service and judicial
child care. I'd be open to doing child care services. Would you like to do child care?
Okay. Who did judicial last year?
Kate, right? No, was it?
He's going
to see this. Yeah. Child care. Is anybody interested in, anybody have a legal future in their hand? I
don't have a legal future. I mean, I guess that's one of my big concerns if anything starts to come up around TJC.
about CJC. It's a pretty important committee, and there are actually some demands on the chair because the campus disciplinary system basically relies on this committee staffing the university hearing and review boards, and so in addition to setting, you know, the code of conduct for the university, you have an opportunity to shape that process, and it's a really helpful service to the university for whoever takes that on.
And last year in particular, it seemed we had at least two significant issues that we worked on from that committee, maybe even three, either the changes to the code and changes to bar, disbarment from the university, and some definitional changes that were meaningful. So this is not an absenteeism or a once-a-semester kind of meeting. It's a, and they always have perpetual staffing issues and often have to come here and say, we need help because we're not getting the slate.
Did he scare you away from doing it?
Maybe, I don't know. I'll try to.
Toss it around in your head, and I'll get back
to my
head to make sure it's something here.
Is there a deadline with the University Hearing Board that requires this committee to start meeting at any time?
They are short-staffed, particularly on staff members right now. So we would want to get the committee meeting fairly soon. It's not so much that it's a technical obligation, it's just that, you know, taking some time to make sure that you can figure out when people can meet and things like that is, should be prepared to spend some time on the committee. Outside of the meeting.
Okay, well, it seems to me then that we have some volunteers, and there will be an email coming around and additional volunteers gratefully received. This brings us then to what seems to me to be the most important issue of this meeting, which is to talk a little bit about the revision or the resolution to amend the charter and bylaws of the University Assembly. And this comes out of an effort last year, which we talked about at some length, to try and redo the charter. We finally got through the relevant other assemblies, students, faculty, employees, permission to change the charter, something that has never been done in the history of the charter because it was so awkward and so difficult. And over the course of the summer, Ed and a group of us have been meeting from time to time to think about what one might do in terms of revising the charter. And rather than have a completely free-flowing, open discussion, we, thanks to Ed and Ari and company and Mike, we have prepared a draft of a potential charter. And what I would like to do today is to spend some time talking about it, get people's reactions, and get a sense of whether you think we're going in the right direction, whether there are obvious problems that we have neglected, whether there are things that we should have thought about that we haven't, things that we haven't thought about and shouldn't have, and comments of that sort. And I don't know what the best way of proceeding is here. Ed, you?
No, I don't know. I just want to emphasize that the summer work was just to sort of, so we could hit the ground running this year, because this is no small task. And so this is very much a document for suggestions, bring to your assemblies as well, and find that, you know, the leaders of your assemblies, if they have any suggestions, constituents. Just sort of a skeleton so that we have a direction to point towards. So if there's anybody that has anything that jumps out, shout out now.
Well, I, of course, maybe you didn't read it, but I sent a lengthy email last night. A lot of that is sort of either typographical or mechanical, and I think that probably will prove uncontroversial. The only sort of two things that jump out for me as issues maybe as a candidate for discussion. The one is the 4244 division. This was something that we've been talking about in the GPSA for a while. So we did 3344 because that's the way it's always been. And there's sort of a concern that in math system the humanities are overrepresented relative to the sciences and that sort of thing. So I was wondering, you know, might it be useful instead of fixing the membership at a certain set number to rather say, you know, for every 1,000 employees there's this many representatives, that sort of thing. The other issue, or
go ahead and I can address it.
The other thing I was going to say, and this sort of came up already in an email thing, was that Preston, the president of the GPSA, he sort of said, I'm not really sure I want to be also on the UA de facto. And he made a very good point, which is that because the assemblies already appoint their members to the UA, isn't it somehow redundant or something to also have the chair as a voting member? You know, is that maybe, you know, when we're talking about commitment with employee assembly, I think we have to be careful that we want people to volunteer to fill these roles, and we want to say, you know, in addition to being chair of the GPSA, you're also, you know, this, that, and the other, and you have the chair committee. So maybe something to think about there too.
I agree, those are good things to think about. So the constituency breakdown, because that's a significant change, it's a functional change to the body. We did talk about it in one of the early meetings in the summertime, and it's roughly based on an equation right now. I think it's about one representative for 2,000.
I didn't mean to imply
it's
arbitrary.
No, but I think it's a good point to think about. We did consider saying guaranteed one seat plus every seat for additional 2,000 employees. And it's still very much up in the air, and if that is a general sense that that's how it should go, I'd be okay.
Yeah.
But it's roughly how the numbers are broken down now, actually.
My point on that is, you get into a Senate versus a House philosophy on this. I'd rather say, for simplicity, that you know, constituent members, you know, for the next, I forget when the elections are in there.
It depends, but is it elections of UA members or
the constituents? So we got into the election issue last year. My point is, I think that it would be behoove us to have language that says the number of the constituent groups will be reviewed annually and set for the next year by a certain date, so that if there's electoral processes, they can be met, so they know how many to put on, you know, how many ballots to arrange and those kinds of processes, and that we can determine in here whether we think, and the assemblies themselves, if they think they're underrepresented, can bring forth the issue through their reps, and we can, you know, have a discussion as to what and how, versus trying to do some kind of university census effective 1 October, divide by, truncate, something perhaps a little cleaner about that it will be reviewed and we set the number by a certain date for the next year.
Following UA term. So instead of something very concrete like one representative for every full 2,000 members of the constituency, saying every so often review the membership breakdown, and then if proposed changes would be effective in the following UA term.
Correct.
I mean, if you were to do that, why not just come up with some wording and then amend it when you want to change the breakdown in the charter?
Well, this requires us to do a formal. In other words, if we're a governance advisory body, these things become. They've been an issue for the last 2 years. Not a big one, but it's been a concern. And how do we fit in? And who do we advise? I think there should be some review formally done here to make sure that it's done. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on committees. 5 years from now, they could all be like, okay, was there pizza at the meeting? And then 2 years later, it's like sustainability, and boy, there's this focus, and you know.
Yeah.
So this would ensure that in a sense, on a certain time scale, that it is always done, or that, you know, we remember to go back to our constituents and ask, do you feel like we're representing you well? And where we also don't want to get into it, where the numbers become a problem in some cases is, okay, if something really balloons, then there's the counter fear of, okay, there's 8 employee assembly or 8 faculty because of the numbers, and so we can't get anything through the filibuster, so to speak, because they vote as a block and their numbers say they can. So
So why don't we just have five or six from each constituency and that will resolve the problem?
Yeah, I don't see the virtue of kind of this equal representation on the UA, or at least I'd like to know the result of our proportions before it's agreeing to an X-sided variable, just because we might lose out intellectually if it means we only have one.
Two graduates, I think we're definitely losing out intellectually.
Yeah. And that also brings me to my next point, is I don't see why we are reducing the total number of seats, especially when, you know, everyone's sitting comfortably at the table right now. And just,
well, everyone's not sitting comfortably. I'll just point out we have two vacant. I wouldn't bring this up, so if you know anybody that wants to be on these, we have two vacant undergraduate seats. I don't know how.
There's an election.
Two vacant faculty.
There's an election.
We have two vacant faculty and a vacant employee.
It's a matter of manageability, being able to reach consensus, and the question is, how many do you need to have a good feel for your constituents?
Yeah.
And that's different for each constituent, and how they body and how they communicate through their representatives. This tends to be a collegial body, so this representation really only matters when it's a divided issue, which we really haven't seen. But that's going to become important.
And that's the thing with the graduate students. You know, like I say, humanities students are overrepresented. They're not happy about being humanities students. We're rarely ever divided, but when we are, you know, you see that's an issue. I think as far as decreasing the size, as I read the charter, the new draft, we would have 18 people, 4 plus 4 plus 4 plus 2 plus 1, each of the heads of the voting members. So that's 18. We have 21 right now. So it's not a dramatic size change. But to come back to something you mentioned was this issue of, I agree that we can amend the charter, but I sort of think in the back of my head, you know, look at the process it took to get this far, you know, maybe we want to make it such that we can adjust if there is some sort of shift without going through the whole charter revision process.
That's why, basically, if I can just pick up on that for a moment, that's why we tried in the charter to keep it relatively general, and to put as much as we could in the bylaws, which are a lot easier to change. Mike, you have the...
I think it might be worthwhile to step back for a minute and talk about the overall vision of what we think the UA should be in the future going forward. As we discuss, you know, this charter and the potential outcome of our deliberations here. And I think one of the things, as I sat down with some of the leaders of the executive committee this summer, one of the things that came out was a vision for the UA that is a cooperative extension, for lack of a better term, a cooperative extension of each of the constituent assemblies. Basically, a cooperative partnership where the assemblies come together and address issues of importance to everybody on campus. Sustainability, CIT, transportation. And basically not serve as a separate assembly higher or lower than the other assemblies, but serve as more of a partnership. And unless anybody, you know, severely objects to this viewpoint, I think this is vision we should probably be taking as we move forward and thinking about things like membership. One of the things that I think helps put forth this vision is the idea of having the executives of each assembly come together and help to lead, not be the actual chair and vice chair of this assembly, because I think that will probably serve a better role for somebody else, but to help lead this common community voice in speaking for the entire Cornell community.
That, I think, is exactly right as to what we've been thinking about, and that is why, for example, from the faculty point of view, I think it makes sense to have the dean of the faculty at the table, who is kind of the executive officer of the faculty and has seats on all the faculty committees and so on. I think it works a lot better than having just random faculty members that have been elected to this body, because you have somebody who's been in charge of staffing all the faculty committees and so on. So that's, I think, one of the reasons for having the executive officer of each one of the assemblies sitting around the table. And yes, it does involve more work, but I think it would help our work enormously, and it certainly solves the communication problem then with the various assemblies.
I think one of the goals also is to simplify. Yeah, it might involve more work here and there for another person, but the idea is to simplify the operations of all the assemblies so we can address issues, again, that are important to us. Yes, we're doubling, I think, our list of areas that we meddle in, but I think by doing that, we can really strengthen, you know, the voice of this body and delegate a lot of that work to the committees, which I think, again, will serve, you know, again, as a combined community voice in those specific areas.
Well, and if I can add kind of another flavor of this, the reason that, from my standpoint, to have the constituent chairs as part of this body is also it allows us, when things come up, somebody can take, well, I'll find somebody to go staff that committee. I mean, we have all these little vacancies, and we kind of operate in little niches, and this allows people to go, oh, I have people who are really interested in this, and I'll go find somebody and bring them here for your vetting kind of thing. The flip side is you want enough representation that isn't certain key individuals to counterbalance, because we definitely have issues in here where we think, not through sinister reasons, but where the administration has not necessarily been fully open all the time, and there's, you know, there's been confusion and other things, and, you know, and we want to make sure that that voice is heard, and it's not the same people who run the university leading these committees, and therefore, aren't we all in sync? Mm-hmm. Everybody nod like this, right? Absolutely tomorrow, kind of thing. And so we definitely want a large enough body, but I think that it does make sure that everybody's in sync. It in a sense, what that means is the committee chair is also kind of a key liaison to the committee. You work that out. So the one question I have about whether we really need to be serious about codifying something on numbers or some additional paragraphs, last year we had a discussion about changing numbers and what did it take to do that. Did we decide whether it required President Scorton to approve a change in numbers?
It was a charter change.
So yeah. I can answer that. It's a charter change. The areas of the charter affecting the authority, the membership, or the amendment procedure for the assembly must be approved by the president.
So my point would be, you're talking about running a procedure if there's an issue or whatever, and then handle it at that time. The only reason to really codify it either is to make sure the review is done on a periodic basis, or to ease the way with which we do it. So we've already pre-greased the skids. It says we'll do this research and recommend, and he, the president or whoever, either has delegated authority or it's a simple matter to actually affect it. If neither of those are true, then we might as well do a resolution at the point of change and, you know, staff all the things that, you know, it's just a matter of whether we can be more efficient and clear in how we do that. As also the other people on the university read this on the website, if they have this issue, helping them get their own answer as opposed to, how is this done? You know, so yeah, if there's no benefit to codifying it, then don't.
Okay. You mentioned House and Senate. I mean, the House membership and Senate membership is specified in the Constitution. It's this many people for this many whatever. You don't need to amend the American Constitution in order to increase or decrease that body if the population changes.
Sure.
So I think as soon as we move away from 4-4-4-4 or whatever, even representation, starting to be more representation by population, it makes sense to have some sort of a formula that's written down.
Okay. So far, yes, Ari, and then I'll just...
I just wanted to respond to a few things to give some more perspective on the trajectory by this, which is developed. I don't know where that's leading everyone, but we did start out with language that specified the, per 1,000 or per 3,000. So there were two issues raised with that. The first one was... it was kind of complicated and messy, and then it would raise questions about, well, how do you determine and when do you determine if the population has changed? It's also a departure from what the text currently does, which is it specifies a number of members for each of these constituencies. And the second one is sort of linked to the faculty in an odd position because you would have to use a different formula for the faculty to come up with these numbers, because the faculty are a relatively small population, but by virtue of the people that they claim in the university, they need to have more than one representative. So those were the two reasons that led to it being written this way. The second thing is, just as a sort of a broad principle that you'll see throughout this document, is this idea that the leaders of the committees associated with the assembly and the constituent assemblies all are brought together in this group. And that was just a principle that was based on the need for agenda coordination. It's the person at the top of the assembly who ultimately steers what shows up on the agenda and knows what's on the agenda. It varies depending on the committee. Some committees, if they appoint their own chair, then that person should become a member of the assembly in some form. But that's a sort of a uniform principle throughout the draft as it's written.
I was wondering if the composition of the university actually changes that much year to year that it would necessitate to calculate what percentage of the university is made up of what, that we would need to change the number of seats by year. Is that
how dynamic is the body change?
Yeah, I don't think it would be dynamic enough that we would really need to change. I think to have a clause that would say maybe every X number of years we can review it to make sure it's fine, I think that might be a good idea, but I don't think that.
I think whether or not that clause is there, that'll happen.
Right.
I mean, if there's some massive
shift
in population, somebody is going to say, hold on a second, I'm overrepresented.
Right, so that makes sense. But I just don't think that it needs to be recalculated year to year. I don't think there's going to be that much.
I should clarify what I mean. I don't necessarily mean an algebraic thing that's right, January 1st at noon or something. But because the way I wasn't at the meeting, but it sounds like you basically used some sort of a formula, modifying things to make sure faculty had representation and all of that, why not write it down? So that when this issue comes up again, as I'm sure it will, in 10 or 20 or 30 years or whatever.
Is the current number not written in the charter?
The rationale is not there. So I think, unless you have something really important,
it's a number thing that I think will clarify this.
Okay, and then
the 4-4-2-4 model will actually result in, for employees, graduate and undergraduate, employees, graduate and undergraduate, about one representative for every 3,200 people, and there's about five percent error in those constituencies, which is small. For faculty, it actually results in one representative for every 727,000. So the faculty are severely overrepresented in this model, but the only way to get to that number that aligns it with the grad undergrad employees is if you bring the faculty representation at one.
Well, in fact, at the moment, faculty are, seven?
Yeah.
And that seems way out of reasonable proportion. And you can see what the faculty attendance is. Look to the right of you, look to the left of you, where is the faculty?
It's a little unfair because we do have some vociferous faculty who are usually here.
Yeah. So far, the two issues that I've noted down are this one we've talked a lot about, and how to break down the numbers of members from each constituency, and then whether or not the chairs of each constituency should be de facto voting members. Are there any other things? So, like I said, this is an ongoing process. I'm sure we're going to have all kinds of revisions.
One of the things that we discussed was just that we were taking on more areas and campus, such as IT.
Mm-hmm.
What's the status of those developments? Have we reached out to them?
Yeah. So, that's a good lead-in. So, part of what we did this summer, along with sitting down as executive committee, plus Andrew was there for some meetings, and Mike was there for some meetings. Once we had kind of an idea of what we thought were issues which affected the broad community, we then reached out to the directors of units, people who have been involved in these areas, and kind of to say, we don't want to sit above you and stomp on you. We want this to be a collaborative thing. We want you to buy into this as well. That's generally a more effective way. So we talked with them about who do you think should be on these committees? What kind of role do you think that the University Assembly, are you interested in us stepping into this realm? And in general, actually, it was a very positive reaction. So we have started to engage with them. One thing that came out of that, and you see in the resolution, is that as much as we talked about how to make up these, if we're going to have some authority in these realms, we need committees in these realms. How do you make up a committee? As much as we outlined some areas, and this was in the final set of meetings, really difficult to do that. And so now we're proposing, rather than from the summer come up with some numbers, ad hoc committees to look at these specific areas, further engage, and really focus in on to how to best represent for that topic.
And who specifically got back to us?
So I met with Lynette Chapel Williams on both family services and child care. And then I met with David Lieb, who is the Assistant Director of Transportation, on transportation. I also, Lynette's meeting also included diversity and inclusion, which is a potential new area. She's the Director of Diversity and Inclusion. Her office also dealt with family services and child care. So I met with her. Mike, you met with a bunch of people in sustainability, correct?
Yep. And Mina.
And Mina for campus planning, who is the campus planner, right? So we've had some fairly high-level meetings there.
I met with Elmira Madden, who just disappeared into Joanne DeStefano's office, about the budget. And what we basically decided was that it made more sense for her to come to the UA as a whole and talk about what's happened with the budget and how the new budgeting procedures are going to work and so on, give a very general overview to this group, rather than to establish a committee at this point, because it wasn't clear what such a committee would really accomplish and how it would be useful. It may be that as plans develop, and she's just developing the budget model, it may be that there will be a role for such a committee. There didn't seem to be at the moment. But it did seem as if she should come and talk with all of us about what's going on and how the budget is changing in the university and how it's going to proceed forthwith. So that's, and I certainly got a feeling that she would be delighted to do that.
And a similar thing went with that chapel. So a new area we were thinking about is diversity and inclusion. This is a really important thing which affects all constituencies on campus. UA doesn't have a history in this. She's all for the UA having a new role in this. She thinks that it's an important thing. Obviously, she's a director of diversity and inclusion, a supporter of the university assembly. But in conversations with her, the university is already doing a lot of things in administrative positions on this, and it was how does the UA carve out a niche that isn't redundant with things that the administration is doing, and if it is redundant, but has its own life. And that was when I first started to realize that, it would be very difficult for us as a small group to sit and say, okay, how do we make up this body to represent diversity and inclusion? An ad hoc committee which would drill into this idea deeper would be a better way. So that's something where, supportive of the idea, she's just not sure and knew exactly where to drill into.
Can I ask, what are our plans for moving this forward and our objective timeline to try and submit it for, because, there's going to be some shade of disagreement all the way to the bitter end. When do we hope to vote on this, or the next steps? And I have, administrative things, and, who do I send them to so they may be considered?
I would definitely, the first email, everybody's free to email to the general body, right? But if you email to the executive board, that will for sure get read. I know I personally read the executive board emails closer than I do general body emails. I know that was intended to be read, immediately. And Ari, who is so great with words, always reads that and makes sure that nothing slips through our minds. So,
yes, I think that's right. And if you can't remember how to do that, Ari will explain how to get it to the UA membership or to the the executive committee of the UA. And if it comes to me, I am fairly good about getting it forwarded on to other people, but not 100%.
So, all right, so send to the executive committee or general, whichever you think is most appropriate.
Yep.
And what is our goal for driving this to completion?
My hope was that we could get this done this fall semester. And if there's not as much controversy, we can get it done faster. You know, as I listen to the comment around the table, I've not heard anything that I think is a deal breaker. And nobody has said, I don't like the whole bloody thing, start again. So
I'll comment on that. I've talked to many people from last year's committee. We think this work is fabulous. We do not like the current charter. It's old. It's just confusing. Thank you for all this groundwork. And I've heard nothing to indicate. I mean, I think this will pass. You know, I never speak about the future, but I've heard nothing that would be a showstopper. I don't that I've heard. Yeah. I mean, there are some devils in the details and that we won't adjudicate. And there's one thing in the bylaws I don't understand about that. The Assembly may suspend any of its actions related to appeal until the Ombudsman makes the final ruling. It was like, that was like, where did that come from? And I didn't quite understand the context. Maybe I missed it. But I would say, or I would recommend that we take a call for members of the Assembly to send your admin and substantive comments and mark them admin or substantive or something similar. Send them to the executive committee, and maybe by next month, if, depending on how many, we can go through the list and
be fantastic if we could do that.
I think that's a phenomenal idea.
There's one substantive one which I will bring up, which Randy Wayne brought up with me, which was the omission in this charter of any authority over the academic side of the house, and that was in the old charter. It's not in the new charter. And Randy objects to that and wants to have legislative authority over the academic side back in the university assembly.
And that was just speaking, Randy and I have talked about this. He agrees, as I think we came to general consensus last year, was that that's the realm of the faculty senate and the faculty process. But he has one specific instance where he believes the process was circumvented. The process as written was circumvented, and he wanted to make sure that the Assembly didn't lose its ability to cry foul if they thought a university process, faculty or otherwise, was somehow usurped or misused. I don't think that this loses that authority, but it doesn't. That would be, maybe I think I'm framing that up accurately.
Yeah, actually, I can't remember the exact words, but there is a clause in here that, so we have, there are authorities which are given, delegated by the president, presumably if he signs off on this, but also the university, well, maybe you can read it, but generally comment on matters affecting.
It says including but not necessarily limited to the following subjects. I think that the UA can feel free to comment on whatever it feels like, whether that's academic or otherwise, whether it's specifically in the charter or not.
So I don't mean that as a direct response to what Randy was saying, but in general, realize that although there are some delineated authorities, it is not restrictive. So
I think those are the only really substantive, other than the issues of membership, which has been which you brought up some time ago, which really are outstanding.
And timeline, yeah, agree. It would be great to have this by the end of the semester.
We can get it done a lot faster than that. Yeah. I mean, if everybody is agreed by the next meeting, there's no reason we can't pass it then and get on with it, which would be wonderful.
It does leave, though, the next question of implementation. When does it kick in? We did have some discussions. Do you kick it in at the following semester, the following school year, fall of the next school year?
I think that should be
a date,
a blank on the resolution. Yeah. These are attached to the president, and we'll fill that in once we know what we think. I mean, if we get it done now, perhaps next semester. If not, then next, but and what we think, what work we have to do is for if we adopt an IT committee, if we adopt a, can we get them up and running? And
it should probably happen after an election, just because then you'll just be like extending people's terms, right?
Yeah, to be honest, we hadn't really figured it out. I think there was a sense that it would, membership would at least change as terms ran out, but the details of that are going to be.
The problem is there are members on this body who serve in 2-year terms, staggered. So there's always going to be some sort of overlap.
Right.
Kind of
play around with the people who are.
So we don't know. The answer is we don't know how we're going to do this yet. It's a second issue on after do we like draft the charter and bylaws.
Although, I'm sorry.
Go for it.
I don't think that it would be premature at this point to share your feedback, because in the resolution there is, those issues are addressed, but they're addressed in a particular way that was basically a guess about how could this be implemented. So there's a resolution associated with this, and that resolution says, currently says it would be effective January 1st, so it would be effective for next semester. Obviously, that's easy to change. And it also says that the provisions about membership will not prematurely end anyone's term, so the adjustment in membership will be through attrition.
Sure.
In terms of a department like CIT, we could add that on as like an ad hoc committee to the current charter, right?
Sure.
Okay. Okay.
So, and that one is one where things are undergoing lots of changes, and I don't think they have their own act together yet. This is what they're doing. I do think it's one that's important for the University Assembly, because it affects all of us. I mean, we all use computers, for good or ill. Just looking around the table, one notices a certain preponderance of said machine.
I also wanted to, there was an error in the bylaws draft that was distributed. I was asked to remove from that draft the IT committee charge and the diversity and inclusion charges, because the resolution calls for an ad hoc committee to be formed to figure out whether to have standing committees and what they should be charged to do. So that was supposed to be removed from the bylaw draft. So that's why there's like one that says TPP for part of it.
Right.
Yeah, this, it got a little messy in here because we had stuff right in place, and then it was decided these are new directions, but the ad hoc thing is probably the best place to go. So
at the next meeting this is presented, those will not appear in the draft anymore.
Imagine.
So there's a January 1st date, and it puts us under the gun a bit. Of course, we can, right, correct me if I'm wrong, we can actually make a new resolution if there we reach a lot of opposition and amend this resolution to a new date.
So, if I can, depends on how aggressive you want to be, but we can charge the members of the UA to submit comments, substantive and administrative, to whichever body you want within the next 2 weeks, and those can be compiled and sent back out perhaps 7 days after that, and that gives us a week before the next meeting to review them and move forward. That would be aggressive.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of that. I've already said my comment.
And the but I would ask what to the executive committee before we. I mean, this is important to me personally, and I think it's a benefit to the whole structure. It's something that should be done. But I don't know when our meeting with President Scorton might be, when he might join us. I don't know what the, in other words, we have a monthly agenda that you guys have probably already gazed at somewhat, and well, okay, I'm seeing if I smile, maybe not, but I remember that there are some people that tend to be universally available here, and there are some issues we tend to tee up at a specific meeting. And I know that there was some interest in following up on where are we with child care, that we kind of started this big tidal wave at the end of last year, and then I don't know whether anybody drowned or whether
No, it seems to have actually progressed.
Yeah, I can. It takes a while to go through it, but I can update you a little bit. I think I sent an email at one point. But
well, then to stay on track, if you think that that's, then I would recommend, or would I propose, whatever. The motion, there we go, that's what I was looking for, that all UA members be charged to review the draft charter and bylaws and provide all comments to the executive committee within 2 weeks, and that those comments be consolidated and turned around approximately a week after that so that we may discuss them and decide next steps at the next meeting.
I can plug some actual dates in there, so that would be comments due September 15th. Comments released with tentative final draft September 22nd for the next meeting, September 29th.
I think the goal of September 29th then would be to accept all the friendly, easy admin and determine where the stickers are, and if we can't resolve them in the 20-30 minutes resolved, then determine how we're going to, are we going to table it, chair it, set up a separate meeting to meet our timeline of January 1st.
Sounds great to me.
Okay.
So the motion is on the table. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there further discussion of the motion?
So the motion includes January 1st as the final deadline?
No.
In support of that goal, but not too early to tie us to 1 January yet.
That we don't know. I mean, we can hope.
Someone said we could also motion to extend the deadline.
That would be a separate resolution after if R1 were to pass and January 1st were to prove unfeasible, we could write another resolution.
Yep.
Well,
you can amend
just this. You can just amend this resolution.
Okay.
We won't submit the resolution until we have a package we want President Court to sign.
Yes.
Right. So
I don't think that it has anything to do with it.
So, notes.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
This seems to be unanimous. More to count?
Okay. All right, so just to reiterate then, comments to the executive committee by September 15th, and then the executive committee will release compiled comments by September 22nd in preparation for September 29th.
Do you want negative replies required?
Negative replies?
In other words, you don't hear from Jim Blair, so are you assuming I have no comments?
Yeah.
Yeah. You would assume that.
All right. Yeah. Or do you want positive confirmation?
I will take complacence as a yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, and this is maybe more of a procedural thing, maybe I'm just wrong about the procedure. Have we talked, or has someone talked with the president? Because we can... all of us in this room can be unanimous on everything, but ultimately it has to go to the president's desk, and he has to sign off on it so we know where he stands on these changes.
No, we don't, but I have been having a conversation with University Counsel, Jim Mingle, and the company, and my guess is that that is where this charter is likely to go for the president's approval. And Jim is very positive and helpful about all this. I sent him a draft, and he hasn't commented on the draft, but we talked about the general strategy, and he was very positive. Now, we can perfectly well send it to the president, see if he has any immediate flags, but I wasn't willing to do that until at least we had this discussion to see whether around the table there were people who were going to say, over my dead body, because X, Y, and Z. And I haven't by and large heard that.
And I also think that is one of the reasons why we've engaged the directors and people in these units, because they'll probably also turn around to Lynette Chapel Williams and say, you're the director of diversity and inclusion, how do you feel? Oh, you pop. This is great, right? Bam, okay. You know, so I think we're making the...
Yeah, that would be my only thing, is making sure, you know, likewise, we're going to propose that constituent assembly heads or members, we want to make sure we talk to those assembly heads and those sorts of things, so that by the time it goes to the president's desk, everybody's already in favor.
Yes.
Which we'll done a wonderful job of doing already.
I think we're moving in that direction. I know the GSA president has chimed in. I don't know if the other ones, but I think that they've seen it. So, yep.
Well, is there anything else for the good of the order here? We've now seen to have reached additional items from the floor. Is there anything on the floor?
Yeah, this is just a quick discussion. Working on this resolution that would it would recommend that the University Assembly create, in addition to its annual report, which tells you financial statements and where we're at, to make public the compensation packages of the executives, less than 50 top administrators who are listed in the annual report. And I already had a discussion with the VP of HR, Mary Opperman.
You're talking about the university's annual report, not the annual report
at my
university.
You said university assembly. You meant the university.
Well, the university would assembly in a resolution recommends that this report be produced every year along with our annual report. And
along with the university's annual report, or you
right.
The assembly's annual
report? No, the university's
annual report. All right.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, sorry.
I was wondering how they walk in here like, so I'm all for it.
Yeah. But it's a big sum at the moment.
There was an item maybe related to this in that the campus newspaper,
mm-hmm.
whose name I really do know,
Son.
Yeah, I really mixed up with it. Anyway, I do know, and I read it, so that's how I know about this. So you know that I'm not lying. Yeah. About the chief investment officer's hefty bonus,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. So I wonder, and maybe because you've looked into this, you know, is that information not already public on tax files, which is where that information.
What's public is the 990 IRS form, which gives you the compensation of the top five executive officers, of the president, the provost, and three others, and then the top five paid, which are those executives, usually doctors. This would expand that to a list of less than 50 individuals who are listed on the Cornell annual report. So we're talking about the deans, top administrators, that sort of thing.
Can
what you the value of knowing that?
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Well, the purpose is, and I could read you a little bit of a resolution I've worked on just to give you some background. Whereas the Common Fund Institute, which calculates the annual higher education pricing index figure, said administrative salaries and fringe benefit costs showed the biggest increases. Whereas according to the HEPI figure in 2009, administrative salaries nationwide increased by 5.4%, up from 5% earlier, a year earlier. Whereas the trend in higher education reveals a continuing climb in administrative salaries as faculty and staff salary increases decline. Whereas all of the medical statistics from Cornell University's IRS 990 form show that Cornell is following this nationwide trend. Whereas Cornell University is in part a land-grant institution that benefits from taxpayer money, whereas all public institutions are required to publish the salaries of their employees in order to provide transparency to the taxpayers, whereas publishing administrative salaries would ensure that Cornell becomes more fiscally responsible as it would be more responsive to financial pressures, whereas Cornell University recently announced a steep 7.9% increase in tuition for students in land-grant colleges and an increase for students in the endowed colleges by 4.5%. Whereas President Scorn and Provost Spock have declared their support for reining in administrative salaries by voluntarily taking a 10% pay cut in 2009 amidst the financial crisis. But it is also worth noting that President Scorn received a 4.5% increase in salary from 2007 to 2008. Whereas a fiscally responsible Cornell should be prepared to justify its increases in administrative salaries and should be responsible to the New York taxpayers who are subsidizing the institution. Whereas the Cornell annual report contains information about the state of the university, including its revenues, expenditures, assets, growth prospects, and leadership philosophy. Whereas the Cornell annual report lists the names and titles of the university's top administrators, which is less than 50 individuals. Whereas a similar annual report on executive compensation will help clarify the fiscal state of the university and will contribute to a more transparent human resource allocation, which is by far Cornell's largest expenditure. Whereas such an action for the sake of transparency is small compared to the transparency enforced by public institutions, in which all salaries are made public, not just the top administrators.
whereas public institutions such as UC Berkeley, University of Michigan, blah, 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 and many others are still able to retain and recruit top administrators despite their public disclosures of compensation, be therefore resolved that the University Assembly recommends the Department of Human Resources to release an annual report hereafter known as the Annual Report on Executive Compensation, disclosing the summary compensation table of all administrators listed in the Cornell Annual Financial Report. Be it therefore resolved that the University Assembly recommends that the Department of Human Resources include in the Annual Report on Executive Compensation comprehensive disclosures of the philosophy and rationalization behind executive compensation policies in clear and plain English. Be it further resolved that the University Assembly recommends that the Annual Report on Executive Compensation disclose the university's specific policies with regard to performance-based compensation payment outcomes for all administrators listed in the Cornell Annual Financial Report. Be it further resolved that the Student Assembly that the University Assembly recommends that the Annual Executive Compensation Report require the disclosure of the ratio of the President's total annual compensation compared to the median total annual compensation of all employees other than the President. Finally resolved that the University Assembly recommends that the Annual Executive Compensation Report be published on the Cornell University website for public view.
So you're writing this to potentially bring it to the Assembly at a future meeting, and you just wanted to know that you're preparing it?
Yeah, I wanted to get initial thoughts, feedback.
Were you working on this before the Sun article came out, or is this your response?
Mm-hmm. I met with Mary Opperman during the summer.
And what was her reaction?
She felt very comfortable defending the philosophy behind her compensation. She also said she could provide those figures, such as the President's ratio to the median compensation for all others. She was, no doubt, hesitant about... She laid out a couple arguments why she wouldn't want to make those salaries public, such as the fact that it's a small community, and people might want to know that. However, if you check my provost, she also said that, you know, don't listen to me because the president has other opinions. And if you look at my notes from my meeting with the provost agreed that in his last two institutions, and what he knows really well is that all salaries are made public. And this wouldn't even do that. This would just make the top administrative salaries public. Considering that that's the fastest growing sector in times of financial crisis, I think that is worthwhile pursuing. The point that you made there.
Just a note, Andrew's very detailed notes from his conversation with the provost are on the UA website in the document section.
Can we get a copy of the or are you prepared? Do you have that draft? Is that
I can email you that after the meeting.
I at this point I have to think about it. I can see the pros and cons. I'm not sure where I think of that, and I certainly don't know what I would think the employee assembly as a general principle might be for such a thing. I need to check with them, and there's a lot of specifics there I'd have to look at.
Right. Understood. But general philosophy, first impressions.
It's very long, and you don't want to get tripped up on one section. I don't know that I.
Two pages.
I'm not sure. I think I am really not in favor of having that all be public information, except as to the 990 forms, simply because I think it inhibits the administration having the kind of flexibility it needs to pay appropriate salaries to folks, and so much depends on their past histories. I don't see that it really gains you a great deal. So, but I don't know. I want to think about it some more. That's just my initial reaction.
It would certainly lead to a public debate annually or more frequently. And if that leads to either justification that is sound or change, then I suppose that would be the benefit of doing this. But it does have its potential downsides, and I don't know.
Getting mad at each other when the dean next to you makes more money.
Well, I mean, there's always the issue about, you know, some departments have a much higher salary base than others. Sometimes that's because their faculty is 10 years older than other faculty, and other times it's because that discipline, there's kind of a In other words, this data could be misused, and that would be the fear. You know, in mature hands, the data, it would be good data to have.
How could it be misused?
Well, I mean, recruiting and retention of a physics, theoretical physics person versus some other discipline versus the medical community, it's not all apples to apples.
Yeah.
It's not all apples to apples. And this environment is very different, but there's definitely an endowed and unendowed, I would bet, that's, you know.
Yes, there is.
And so you publish it and you potentially disenfranchise these people. Well, why should I do all this work? I'm making half of what that person's making and I work harder as hard. That can affect the university in ways that can be positive as well as negative, and that's, I don't know.
I think we live in 50 different states, and if you're recruiting, in fact, even from around the world, not just the United States, globally they recruit. And I think to say that someone who's in, I mean, I'm not putting down anybody, but someone who lives in the state of Mississippi compared to someone who lives in New York State, the cost of living and everything is very different. Or somebody you're bringing in from France compared to somebody you're bringing in from Australia or Japan. I mean, that's why I was saying, what's the value?
These are only administrators. And furthermore, every public institution does this. So University of Virginia's administration, I don't think, runs that much less smoothly than Cornell University's administration.
So then the only 50 you would be publishing are those that are in the public side, not the private side, not the endowed side. But why do that? Why split the campus like that?
Wait. I'm not talking about that.
He's just saying top 50
administrators. The provost, I mean, that's already published, but the vice provost, the people in the administration, who are listed at the end of the Cornell annual and financial report, and they all have titles. They're not just like the theoretical physicists that are brought in from another country. These are people who are in that hall.
So this is like the director of human resources, the director of, I need to look at the annual report. I need to look at the names. I need to just.
Okay.
I'm not prepared to render opinion.
Exactly, yeah.
The issue is sort of. I think this is what Jim is getting at, is that if something untoward is going on, it will embarrass people. But that's, of course, precisely the point.
Well, let's
make that assumption that something's untoward.
So let me clarify my intent. My intent is, at some point, just like President Obama is a public figure, at some point, even at Cornell, President Scorton's a public figure, and you know these kinds of disclosures are just part of his job. I don't know about number 40 and 42 on the list. At some point, you're not such a public figure. A dean, I'd probably agree, is a public. There's just things like that.
I just thought it was quite interesting because
well,
people
that
list.
Well,
but it's a good place to draw the line. I have to look at it.
Have you considered like the distinction between the like endowed colleges and the state colleges?
Because
I don't know what they do.
Well, I feel like there's a difference because like state colleges are being subsidized by New York State taxpayers. I think maybe you have a better argument for that because you know, taxpayers are helping fund those salaries and
right, but it's a big pot.
I feel like all these arguments are valid, but I think that's just what makes the resolution kind of controversial. But at the end of the day, in the times that we're in right now, the economic times, I think in terms of full disclosure as well, it's very appropriate.
Yeah, I agree.
Well,
I can
see
it.
Sorry.
It's going to be a fun one.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, something to keep in mind is this would not be full disclosure because it will immediately raise the question of what is the reasoning for each person's compensation relative to the other one. And I think that the issue that they're raising is, for one thing, you know, what if it causes somebody to suddenly have to spend time that they're supposed to spend working on their job defending the salary that they were given by somebody else at the institution?
I think Jim makes a valid point. In case somebody's in a job for 20 years compared to somebody that's in a similar job just for 2 years, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to be at the same compensation.
So I really don't see the value in it. I really don't.
I think that's healthy conversation, though. I mean, you can make the case for any athlete, which every single competition is, like, exposed. When they don't perform well, people are, like, ragging on them, but that's just part of the job.
Well, see, there's a couple of nuances to this. One is, I don't know, but there probably exists benchmarks to tell, in other words, how are we compared to, and who do we compare to?
Yeah, I'm sure that would be included in the philosophy statement.
Because, you know, so that's one aspect of it, and the second aspect of it is if we send this to the president and he signs it, well, there's one controversy. If we send it to the president and he doesn't sign it, that's a controversy. This is the kind of resolution that really puts the president over, well, I don't know, depends on what his views are, you know. So you definitely want to handle it deftly, and so I think your point's well taken. I think we need to see the resolution. I think we all need to do some homework.
I agree. And I'm going to try and send out the resolution with the financial annual report, and maybe I can find those statistics online. But
and a link to where those 50 positions are iterated.
That's at the end of the financial annual report, the last page. I just think, you know, maybe it's not a bad time for the UA to be a little controversial. Maybe it's not a bad time for us to assert ourselves a little bit. And that when you think about this resolution, think about it in terms of its internal benefits and how there's really, I can't think of a serious downside when you consider all those public institutions that are good, that make their salaries public. I just think this is the right time for this sort of thing.
Okay. Christina?
I was just curious how the Bain report factors into all this salary discussion. I mean, maybe some of this is already being looked at. Maybe we need to find out more of their results. We haven't heard anything since last semester. So I'm sure more is going to be churned up as we progress.
I would suggest that you talk with the employee assembly, because I know that there will probably be some conversations with them if they're rolling out a new, they are reevaluating the pay grading system.
Yes, but I'm talking about like administrators, top level administrators as well. Yeah. I mean, that's something that they're probably looking at.
I think the other thing, just real quick too, was some positions at the top were not filled, and so, for example, like Mayor George Offerman, now instead of doing maybe four things, she's doing seven. You know what I mean? And the president and the provost and everybody else at the top. I mean, you're aware of that, right?
Yeah, and okay. I think their salaries may not have increased that much. I would just like to know, you know, what they are. I'd just like to know when my tuition is being increased about 8%, mm-hmm. how much more money they're making.
Okay. So you'll forward the information to everybody.
That sounds good. Is there any other comments for the good of the order?
Great talk to be here.
All right, then I think we stand adjourned. Yes, I'm sorry.
We need a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Oh my gosh. We're in a discussion. All in favor. Let's do it.
You know what my summer reading has been?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.